Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And good morning. Welcome to the Hoosier Report here on Big X Sports Radio. Lee Kelly subbing for Matt Dennison today. Glad you're along with us. Well, to say that IU has had problems playing in Wisconsin is an understatement. 17 losses in a row at Wisconsin. The good Devontae Green showed up against Florida State. The bad Devontae Green showed up against Wisconsin. We'll talk with Zach Osterman a little bit later about that, but a disappointing weekend for Hoosier fans as IU, undefeated going into that game, found themselves trailing by 31 points in the second half. Not a good day for IU basketball. IU football now has a bowl game destination and an opponent. Jacksonville, Florida is where they will be playing. And a date with the Tennessee Volunteers after a little bit of suspense. Apparently at one point it was going to be Indiana against Kentucky. Tennessee objected and was moved into that spot previously held by Kentucky. So Tennessee, Indiana, Jacksonville, Florida in the Gator Bowl. IU football picked up a very interesting player over the weekend. He agreed to come in as a preferred walk-on. And normally that wouldn't excite a whole lot of people. However, this young man just happens to be the all-time leading rusher in Indiana, holds the record for touchdowns and a number of other records. He's decided that he will walk on at IU. High school basketball for both the boys and girls now in full swing and some top performances in the past week. We will take a look at our top local teams and upcoming games for the week here a little bit later. Romeo Langford, hard to find information on his status or the length of his time away. The only thing I can find was he will be unavailable for Boston in tonight's game. Wednesday, the Celtics play the Pacers in Indianapolis. A lot of local fans have some pretty high-priced tickets for that game, and many of those may go unused. Let's jump into today's lineup brought to you by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we're going to talk a little IU football, IU basketball. We'll talk some high school basketball. We'll have our Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week and a whole lot more. Next segment, we'll find Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Again, we'll talk IU football and basketball and try to get a little bit of a pulse on what in the world happened in Wisconsin on Saturday. And we'll finish up today with Chad Gilbert, Charlestown High School Athletic Director and a member of the board of the IHSAA. I've got a couple of questions for Chad dealing with player transfers at the high school level and exactly what goes on, what decisions go into the process, and so on. That'll be coming up in our final segment today. Guest lineup brought to you by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget to stop by Honey Baked Ham in New Albany and mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You'll get $1 off a delicious box lunch made to order just for you at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. And oh, by the way, don't forget the cookies. Love Honey Baked Ham cookies. All right, time for the Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week, presented by Sir Dano's Pizza Parlor in Sellersburg. Each week, we get the opportunity to recognize an outstanding athlete for their performance during the past week, presented by Sir Dano's Pizza Parlor. Pizza at its best. thin crust pizza made to order, sliced into squares. Hometown Pizza at Sir Dano's Pizza, across from Silver Creek Junior High. Sir Dano's, squarely the best. Well, we had some outstanding performances for both the boys and girls hardwood games this week. New Albany sophomore Tucker Bivin, 32 points, 4 3-pointers, and New Albany a winner there, 68-45 over Evansville Harrison. Cooper Jacoby finished with a game high in points with 26, rebounds with 15, and an 80-38 win over Charlestown. And Silver Creek's Trey Kaufman, 32, and a 72-48 win over Clarksville, came back with 22 more in that win over Charlestown. Henryville's Weston Allen, 20 points in a win over Salem. Rock Creek's Ladarius Wallace, 33 points, and a 69-64 loss to New Washington. New Washington's Jesus Diaz, 20 points in that win over Rock Creek. Floyd Central's Cole Herrett just could not miss on Friday night. 23 points, including 6 3-pointers, and a Floyd Central 66-62 win over Castle. On the ladies' side, Jeff's Nan Garcia, 20 points and 10 rebounds, and a 50-46 win over Madison. Silver Creek's Jacqueline Emily, 21 points, and Silver Creek girls win over Clarksville. Natalie Bosing of Providence, 25 points, 10 rebounds. That came in a 56-22 win over Christian Academy, Indiana. And New Washington's Taylor James, 20 points, and a 50-32 win over Borden. Obviously, a number of outstanding performances, and we have one other that just was able to get some information on. Will Lovings-Watts, 24 points, and that Jeff Heartbreaker of a loss to Lawrence North on Saturday night. And the young men stepped up big time, had 9 field goals and 5 of 7 from the free throw line for Will Lovings-Watts, and a big game for Jeff. Well, we took it all into consideration, and we decided that our athlete of the week is going to be Tucker Bivin with 32 points, including 4 3-pointers, and the New Albany Bulldog win over Harrison. Tucker's just a sophomore, and with a baseball scholarship from the University of Louisville already in his back pocket, he's off to a great start on the basketball season as well. He's the leading scorer for the Bulldogs as well in their first 2 games. So Tucker Bivin, our Big X Sports Radio Athlete of the Week, presented by Sir Dano's Pizza. Time for our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the top IU and local headlines. And IU football, IU fans now know where to book their flights and hotels. And IU learned Saturday afternoon that Jacksonville, Florida, on January 2nd, will be the host for IU and Tennessee in the Gator Bowl. The game time will be 7 o'clock that night. Last year's Gator Bowl featured Texas A&M, and they were a big winner over NC State, 52-13. Tex Slayer Gator Bowl, held in the city of Jacksonville. It's been played continuously since 1946, so one of the games that's been around for a long, long time. Bowl game is run by the Gator Bowl Association. It's a nonprofit group down in the Jacksonville area. The Clemson Tigers have visited the Gator Bowl the most of any team. 9 appearances. They're 4-5 in the Gator Bowl, and that game with IU and Tennessee will be carried by ESPN and also here on Big X Sports Radio with Don Fisher. The IU Bowl history finds the Hoosiers on the short end. Of the 11 bowl games they've played in, they have won just 3. And the last bowl game, the Foster Farms Bowl, Utah defeated Indiana 26-24. Prior to that, in 2015, the New Era Pinstripe Bowl, Duke edged out Indiana in overtime, 44-41. The last victory for Indiana, 1991. In the Copper Bowl, Indiana defeated Baylor 24-0 in that game. A lot of action going on. We're going to talk with Zach Osterman a lot about the bowl game and what's coming up and what else might be happening in those bowl games. The new addition we talked about earlier is a 5'11", 225-pound player named Charlie Spiegel. And Spiegel is ran this year for 3,168 yards, 55 touchdowns, 160 yards and a touchdown in the state championship game that New Pal won, actually back-to-back championships for that team with this young man at running back. For a career, amazing statistics. 10,867 yards, 173 rushing touchdowns, 175 total touchdowns. All of those are state records. And oh, by the way, he was named the Indiana Gatorade Player of the Year. A lot of schools stayed away from him because they didn't feel he had the speed to play at the high Division I level. Time will tell. But Charlie Spiegel, a young man that's been known throughout the state for his accomplishments on the football field. IU basketball, Hoosiers defeated by Wisconsin, as we said earlier, 84-64. No Rob Fennessy for that game. Another number of other players failed to show up as well. And it was a very disappointing performance. The first loss of the season for IU, but to get beat, one thing, but they were down by 31 points in the second half and just not a good performance. Archie Miller talking about a lack of leadership or not having a leader and made some other comments as well. It seemed that he was very disappointed as well as the rest of us. Big Ten games this week. Minnesota's at Iowa tonight, Maryland at Penn State, and Connecticut at Indiana. On Tuesday night, that IU game, a 9 p.m. starting time. Wednesday finds Wisconsin at Rutgers, Michigan at Illinois. Big Ten well represented in the AP poll. Ohio State at number 2, Maryland at number 4, and Michigan dropping to number 6 after previously being number 4. IU women's basketball team, a winner on Saturday, 72-45 over North Florida. That's their 8th season victory. They have a lone defeat. The women's team will meet Butler in Indianapolis on Wednesday. Terry Moore, a Seymour native, head coach for the IU women, and has them ranked number 14, playing very well at this point. Former New Albany Bulldog Isaac Hibbard with another strong performance in Hanover's win on Saturday over Manchester. Hibbard played the entire 40 minutes, scored 19 points with 5 rebounds, had 8 assists and a steal. Christian Stewart of Clarksville scored 2 points in 5 minutes of play. Hanover improved to 6-0 on the year, and they'll meet Defiance of Ohio on the road this Saturday. Another former Bulldog star, Sean East, played 21 minutes, had 3 rebounds, an assist, and 4 points. And the Minutemen lost to Harvard over the weekend. UMass now stands at 5-5 on the year. You're listening to the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison on this Monday morning. Matt will be back with you tomorrow. Back to football. We know the top 4 teams that will battle for the national championship. LSU, after the committee finished, was put at number 1. And they will meet number 4, Oklahoma. LSU crushed Georgia for the SEC title, and the number 1 slot went to LSU. Oklahoma beat Baylor in maybe the best game of the day. That victory, coupled with a Georgia loss, has those two flipping, moving Oklahoma up to the 4th slot. Georgia dropped down. Other matchup has Big Ten champ Ohio State meeting ACC champ Clemson. 3 of the 4 teams undefeated, with Oklahoma a 1-loss season. 4 teams in the Final 4, obviously. 3 have quarterbacks who transferred in from other schools. We'll talk a little bit with Zach about that as well. We're also going to talk with Chad Gilbert about transfers as well, more at the high school level, but major changes that way. Major League Baseball winter meetings going on through this Thursday, started yesterday. They're out in San Diego. Which GM or owner will mortgage the future for that next superstar and spend millions and millions of dollars for years and years of play? Super agent Scott Boras has just a lot of players lined up in his stable, and man, he gets some giant contracts for those guys. Going to be interesting to see if anything comes out of these meetings or any trades or major signings of free agents come later. High school results on the basketball floor from Saturday night. Christian Academy, a 51-38 winner over New Washington. Henryville edged Salem 53-52. Jennings County knocked off Rock Creek Academy 62-54. Lawrence North on a dunk at the buzzer in overtime defeated Jeffersonville 61-59. Talked to a couple of Jeff fans that were there. Said it was a very disappointing ending, but an outstanding game to watch from the stands, and certainly sounded like it. New Albany got their first win of the year, a 68-45 win over Evansville-Harrison on Saturday night in the doghouse. And some games coming up this week to keep an eye on. New Albany-Floyd Central renew their rivalry, and that'll be coming up on Friday night. Zionsville, new team on the New Albany schedule. They will come to town on Saturday. Silver Creek meets Lulafay in North Harrison on Friday and then plays one of the top teams in the state, Fort Wayne Blackhawk, on Saturday in the Southport Shootout. That they're scheduled to play around 6:40 on Saturday night. That shootout runs all day. You can get more information about it online and find out. A lot of great teams playing against each other in that tournament. It's a fun day. Certainly recommend if you get the opportunity and you're available on Saturday to make your way to Southport. That's the Zaxby's headlines for this Monday edition of the Hoosier Report. Don't forget that Zaxby's does catering, party-sized platters of your favorite appetizers, entrees, and sides. Zaxby's, with locations in Jeffersonville and New Albany, the perfect way to cater your upcoming Christmas and holiday parties. We'll be back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star here on the Hoosier Report on Big X Sports Radio in just a moment.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back to the Hoosier Report on this Monday morning. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison. Matt will be back with you tomorrow here on the Hoosier Report. Time for segment two, and that means Zach Osterman joining us here on this Monday morning. Good morning, sir.
Hey, how we doing?
So far, so good, but it's still very early in the day. Let's look at the more positive things that went on over the week, and let's start with the football program and a trip to the Gator Bowl. Looks like a good deal. Can you get a gauge on if IU fans and IU coaches and so on were happy and excited about this invitation?
Yeah, I think there definitely is a lot of excitement. I mean, Indiana was kind of in this weird waiting game. You know, in my experience, even going into Championship Sunday, typically – you're pretty confident about a lot of the bowl pecking order. But this time around, and I know Matt and I have talked about this the last few weeks, because there was this weird glut of 8, 9, and 10 win teams in the Big Ten, it looked like somebody might get bumped down a tier, essentially. And Indiana would be happy to go anywhere to go bowling. Indiana's, you know, never going to look at a bowl and say it's a disappointment. But there was definitely a feeling that if Indiana did get bumped and wound up in all likelihood back in the Pinstripe Bowl where they were in 2015 at 6-6, that maybe there would be just a little bit of disappointment, you know, a little bit of, you know, geez, you know, could we not get a little bit more for a season that obviously has been a lot more successful than any Indiana's had in recent memory. But Championship Saturday went well for Indiana. Oklahoma winning, Utah losing so heavily on the Friday. Wisconsin putting up enough of a fight to stay in the Rose Bowl, and then Penn State sliding into the Cotton alleviated that Big Ten traffic jam, if you will, and got Indiana into the Gator Bowl, which is obviously the first Florida Bowl in the program's history. It's only the third time Indiana will play on or after New Year's Day. First time since 1988. Ironically, also against Tennessee in the Peach Bowl in 1988 after the 87 season. And so just generally speaking, I think everybody's very excited. I think everybody's excited about the matchup, getting a program like Tennessee, an SEC team, and all those different things. And just maybe feeling like, hey, you know, this season is going to end, you know, with a real sort of, I don't want to say spectacle, but, you know, a nice showcase game after obviously an unusually successful season for Indiana.
Is part of the reason they were selected to go to the Gator Bowl or one of the better bowls because of their offense? Because as a fan, I like watching offense during a game. I appreciate good defenses, but a 7-0 game does not hold the same excitement for me as a 44-40 or whatever it might be. And IU's offense has had some outstanding games this season, and Peyton Ramsey certainly a great story to tell people. You think that had some bearing on that Gator Bowl and the selection committee?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Gator Bowl was definitely interested in Indiana just because of its profile, because of its exciting offense, because it knew Indiana would have an energized fan base after such a successful season, you know, a lot of different factors. Maybe even to some degree, the number of Florida, Georgia, and Alabama kids on Indiana's roster. So you're going to have some storylines to highlight, including a couple kids from Jacksonville, a couple safeties, Khalil Bryant and Devon Matthews. But the Gator Bowl was still beholden to the Big Ten's bowl structure, which would have said in all likelihood, we don't know this for sure because this is, you know, sort of one of those alternate realities that never played out. But in all likelihood, let's say Penn State can't get into the Cotton Bowl and winds up dropping down to maybe the Citrus Bowl. Then in that situation, the Gator Bowl, like all the other bowls in the Big Ten structure, would be beholden to the Big Ten's hierarchy. And I think what you would have probably seen was Iowa in the Holiday Bowl, Penn State in the Citrus Bowl, Minnesota in the Outback Bowl, and then Michigan in the Gator Bowl and Iowa in the Holiday Bowl and Indiana dropping down to the pinstripes. So the Gator could have wound up in a couple different directions. Having talked to Rick Catlett, the president of the bowl, before the selection, and then hearing from him on their teleconference after the selection, I think the Gator Bowl is really happy to have Indiana. I think Indiana was on the Gator Bowl's radar for a long time because of its record and its achievement. But I also think, at some level, the Gator Bowl had to wait to see what the Big Ten wanted to do and just kind of how those things shook out before it could, you know, officially invite IU.
The initial announcement that I saw had Kentucky playing Indiana, and then all of a sudden I checked back a little later to look at headlines, and it had all of a sudden changed to Tennessee. And initially I thought Kentucky might have asked to get out of the game, but that made no sense. Then I read a story that said Tennessee actually is the one that complained they wanted to play in the Gator Bowl and thought they had the better resume. And so is that pretty much what you heard as far as the switching around of teams?
Yeah, the SEC's bowl structure can get a little funky sometimes. And what it sounds like happened effectively was at the last minute, Tennessee did change its mind. I think Tennessee was lined up to go to the Music City Bowl to play Louisville. And I don't know if it was matchups or just, you know, the Gator Bowl is probably a little bit more prestigious than the Music City Bowl. A little bit more novel probably for a fan base that probably spends a lot of time in and around Nashville as it is. The Gator Bowl Tennessee did what apparently the SEC allowed it to do, which is basically kind of rearrange its own thought process at the last minute. And that obviously bumped Kentucky to the Belt Bowl, moved Mississippi State up to the Music City Bowl, and brought Tennessee down to the Gator Bowl. I think from Indiana's perspective, it's going to be a tough matchup either way. You know, if you'd had Kentucky, you would have had Lynn Bowden. You would have had this hyper-athletic quarterback and this revamped offense that I think would give Indiana's defense a lot of trouble. In Tennessee, you're going to face a really tough, stout, athletic defense that I think is really going to test Indiana's offense, particularly if Kalen DeBoer leaves for Fresno State, as kind of national reports have suggested he might. My son is chiming in here. He's homesick for the day. But either way, I think Indiana would have been happy with either matchup. Kentucky obviously would have been a lot of fun for IU. I think Tennessee, the prestige of that program, getting a recognizable SEC opponent, I think that's exciting too.
All right. ESPN has already come out with their predictions for each of the bowl games, and their early prediction has Tennessee a 3-point favorite in that game, and hopefully that's not the way it works out. But it with a salary increase for Coach Allen, and I think I saw where there's more money going to be available for assistant coaches, it looks like the success they've had is being recognized and things are being done to help the program improve even more in the future. In your opinion, what's the next thing that needs to happen? Assistant-wise, facility-wise, recruit, whatever it might be that would jump out first in your mind that needs to happen next?
Yeah, I think from a program perspective, and I think you're seeing Indiana maybe have some success with this already, picked up 3 commitments yesterday, including a couple players with some really impressive offer sheets. Also flipped a kid who was committed to the University of Ohio, or Ohio University, I guess it is, in the Mid-American Conference. I think the first thing that needs to happen, you know, within the program is Tom Allen keeps recruiting really well. You know, this is right now looks on track to be his 3rd straight top 50 recruiting class. I know that's not super impressive if you're talking to an Ohio State or a Michigan, but it matters at a place like this. And anybody who's talked to me knows that I am very much recruiting rankings guy. I didn't used to be. And then I worked in that world and I saw just how predictive those things are in the aggregate, that you can find individual hits and misses among players. But when you look at where teams rank in the collective year after year, it tends to kind of be about where they perform. And Indiana has spent too long recruiting, you know, with team rankings in the 60s and 70s. And I think you've seen that improve over the last 10 years, and you've certainly seen it improve over the last 3 seasons. And if Indiana can close out really strong in this class and then take the success of this season and Allen's new contract and really have a great 2021 class as well, I think that just keeps pushing you forward, because it raises the floor effectively on just the level of talent and athleticism in your program. And if you have enough of those qualities, then eventually you'll find ways to win football games. I think we've even seen that this season, that even when Indiana's had some imperfect performances, they have found ways to win football games just because they are more talented than they used to be. I think from an institutional perspective, you know, the next thing is a little bit more difficult to nail down, because Indiana's enclosed both ends of its stadium. Indiana has obviously just revamped the locker room. A significant upgrade there. You know, is it something like maybe examining what can be done with Mellencamp Pavilion, Indiana's indoor practice facility? I could see something like that in the next 3 to 5 years. I think certainly pushing for more and more fan involvement and again, capitalizing on maybe the excitement and the passion of a season like this from a fan perspective, from a ticket sales perspective, from an attendance perspective, those things I think can continue to help grow the program as well. And then I think maybe more than anything else, just being ready and willing the next time there is something to spend on, to not say, well, but we already gave you all this other stuff, so we're done now. But rather to say, okay, you know, we just need to keep taking steps forward. Even if it's small steps, we just need to keep taking steps forward.
You mentioned 3 recruits. One of the people that has agreed to come to IU this as a preferred walk-on is Charlie Spiegel of New Palestine, who I think holds every offensive record in the state now, 10,000 rushing yards and touchdowns and so on. Apparently, one of the knocks on this young man is his speed. But IU was willing to allow him to be a preferred walk-on. On paper, this looks like, you know, you keep your fingers crossed, but looks like it could be a pretty good pickup for IU. Have you seen this young man play in person by any chance, Zach?
I haven't seen him in person. Obviously, I know a lot about him, given what he's achieved and what New Pal's achieved over the last few years. It sounds a little bit trite, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, the best teams also tend to have great walk-ons. And if you're Indiana and you need to leverage, I mean, literally every little advantage you can think of, you know, that you – this is every once in a while I drop soccer references on Matt, so I'll drop one on you as well. The club that I support, Liverpool Football Club in England, a couple off seasons ago brought in a coach who was a specialist in throw-ins. When the ball goes out of play and a player can run and throw it in, and people made fun of him. He just said, when you throw the ball in, you just throw it in. It's one of the simplest parts of the game. But Liverpool basically said, if it gets us 1% better, then we're 1% closer to achieving what we want to achieve. And, you know, if you're Indiana, different things will have a different level of impact. A great coaching hire is going to have a different level of impact than getting a stud freshman to commit. Or, landing a great transfer is going to have a different level of impact than opening your new locker room complex. These things all, in different ways and for different reasons, can affect the amount of success you can reasonably expect to have. Bringing in really good walk-ons may not be something that people think a lot about, but if it helps get you 1% better, then it helped. If it helps get you 1% better, then it took you forward. And I think from Charlie Spiegel's perspective, it's a chance to come in and train like a Big Ten athlete, get Big Ten coaching. Maybe, I mean, you talk about some of the knocks on his physical tools. Maybe that curve flattens a little bit and he winds up being an impact player. Or maybe he's the kind of guy, and Indiana's had these guys in recent years too, who come in, give you two or three really good years as walk-ons, and then transfer to a smaller school and play right away and you know, put up big yards and touchdowns and whatever else. I don't know. I think it's admirable that Charlie Spiegel is taking this chance on himself. I think it speaks probably to a culture that sort of is selling itself in Indiana, that a kid like this, who did have, if I'm not mistaken, Football Bowl subdivision offers. I think Army had offered. I think a couple other small FBS schools had offered. That he's choosing instead to walk on at a place like Indiana. Okay, you know, he may never play a down in a game. We don't know. But when you have good walk-ons, it helps contribute to good culture. And when you have good culture, it helps contribute to winning. And that's a little bit of a simplistic view. But if anything gets you, if you're Indiana especially, if you're a program that needs to leverage every possible advantage you can find to have success, that there's so little baked in for you, there's absolutely nothing wrong with seeing this as a big win, because maybe it gets you that 1% closer to what you want to achieve next.
I'm glad to see it. I've only seen the young man play on TV in the state championship, but I follow his career a little bit because he gets a lot of publicity in your newspaper, and I read the sports section of your newspaper, so I keep reading about him. And he's the Gatorade Football Player of the Year. So I'm glad he chose in-state school Indiana to go to. Hopefully it'll work out for him, but certainly glad to see that. Let's turn to the sad news that came out of Wisconsin on Saturday. What happened to IU, the team that was undefeated, the team that knocked off Florida State, the team that had IU fans excited to this point, and then things did not go well in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty accurate summation. Things did not go well. I think Archie Miller's quote after the game was something like, we did not play well at either end of the floor. You know, I think in one sense, this felt like kind of a collision of maybe all of Archie Miller's biggest fears about this team. What would happen when this team couldn't knock down some shots? You know, what would happen if this team had some injury issues? I think Indiana really missed Robert Phinisee, not just his stats, but his impact, his intangibles on Saturday's leadership, his coolness, his calm. What would happen if Indiana couldn't out-rebound an opponent? What would happen when Indiana couldn't sort of heavily outscore an opponent at the free throw line, which is something that's probably going to be a problem when you go on the road this season, or any season in the Big Ten for that matter. So it's kind of a collision of maybe all those things at once. But I do think there are some, you know, some bigger intangible concerns as well. And the biggest one just sort of being that Indiana just sort of seemed to fold in on itself. And not that guys were scared, but that as soon as things started going wrong, you felt like Indiana abandoned its faith in what had worked so well through eight games. And I know people who say, well, Archie Miller should have taken this team on the road sooner. Well, he took his team on the road game three last season at Arkansas in a game they probably weren't ready for. They lost on a tip-in. And if they'd won it, I bet you we talk about Indiana as an NCAA tournament team last year, because they'd have one more win, one fewer loss, one more quality win. I think they'd probably be in the field at that point. And so my point is simply, there's no perfect solution to that. There's no, you know, there's just trying to figure out basically how to get as ready as you can possibly be and accept that all solutions have imperfections in them. And from Indiana's perspective, not going on the road until the Big Ten opener on what was that, December 7th, was probably one of them. But I think that it should have been a stark sort of wake up call for IU in the sense of just saying, listen, when things start to go bad, we cannot just kind of abandon our offense, get so torn up on defense. You know, I think you saw a lot of the old, my son wants to go downstairs. I apologize.
Not a problem.
You saw a lot of maybe the old coaching trope of trying to do somebody else's job on defense. And obviously, I think we all know that that just tends to lead to a lot of mistakes. And you just more than anything saw in a basic way a team that just sort of lost faith in itself and lost belief in itself. And that's something that Indiana's got to learn to erase, regardless of whatever else happens. It's okay to have a bad shooting night. It's okay to have a bad night defensively. It's okay to have a night where, you know, you don't get fouled or to the free throw line as often as you'd like. But you can't have nights where everybody just sort of loses their head and just forgets what got them their success to begin with. And I think that was maybe the biggest concern for Indiana coming out of that game.
This week for IU, Connecticut tomorrow night, and that's a team that's won three games in a row. So pretty good ball club. They've knocked off Florida and Miami, lost a heartbreaker to Xavier. And then Nebraska, they get both of those teams at home this week. How important are those two games for IU for not just this week, but for the future, the rest of the season?
Yeah, so the UConn game is actually in New York City. It's at Madison Square Garden, which I think is a really good – I think maybe in a way it's good for this team to have a game like that so soon after Wisconsin, to just be able to turn the page, to not stew on Wisconsin so much. I mean, I don't know if Wisconsin turns out to be a burn-the-tape game for Archie Miller or not, but I do think that to be able to – turn your attention so quickly to another high-profile game, UConn at the Garden, Jimmy V Classic, primetime on ESPN. You know, you know kind of if you don't need to – enough of these players have played in big games at Indiana that they don't kind of need to be told what all that should mean to them. And then Nebraska at home, a chance to just kind of get right from a Big Ten perspective. I think a 2-0 week this week. I'm not saying that it erases everything that went wrong against Wisconsin, but I do think that it allows Indiana to maybe say, hey, we had one bad afternoon. We're not going to let that sink an entire season. We got a couple nice wins back-to-back here. And then they get a week and a day off around finals before playing Notre Dame in Indianapolis. And they get another week and a day off before wrapping up their non-conference against Arkansas. So all of a sudden, you also have some time to kind of work on yourself a little bit if you're Indiana after this week too. And I think that can be very helpful for this team. Get guys healthy and get some things figured out. Indiana, I would say, I don't think Indiana needs to beat UConn, but I think that especially given the way the Wisconsin game went, as much for confidence as for NCAA tournament selection or anything like that. Indiana probably needs to finish no worse than 3-1 over these last four games in December. UConn in New York, Nebraska at home, Notre Dame in Indianapolis, and Arkansas at home. I think Indiana needs to come out of that stretch no worse than 11-2 overall. And if they do, I think they'll be okay. I think they'll have picked up some nice wins. I think that you'll probably have seen some significantly improved performances out of Wisconsin. And we can talk about a team that's more ready for Big Ten play to restart for good in January.
Sounds good. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach, thank you very much for joining us. Hope your son feels better. I know as a parent, now a grandparent, I know how that works out. So thanks for joining us this morning, and good luck.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
All right. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star joining us here on a Hoosier Report for a Monday morning. We'll be back with the athletic director at Charlestown High School, Chad Gilbert, and continue the Hoosier Report here on Big X Sports Radio.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And welcome back once again. Final segment today here on the Hoosier Report. Lee Kelly setting in for Matt Dennison. Matt will be back with you tomorrow morning. Our final segment is always on Monday. Chad Gilbert, athletic director at Charlestown High School and also a member of the IHSAA board. Good morning, Mr. Gilbert.
Gary, good morning. How are you doing today?
So far, so good. I've got my coffee. Everything's working out for a Monday especially.
It's great to hear from you. That means basketball season is right in the corner. Anytime you hear your voice on radio, it has that feel. It's almost like you smell the popcorn in the gym.
Ah, I tell you, I love it. Matt and I have been able to get out to a couple of games together on the radio, and it's great. It's like it never ended from the previous season. It's just right there. So, been fun already.
That's exactly right.
That's one of my questions. I know the IHSAA breaks down the school year into fall, winter, and spring sports seasons, and just finished up with football, which kind of is the final sport to be playing as part of the fall sports section. So from an IHSAA standpoint, has it been a pretty good school year so far through the fall sports season as far as participation in the sports and fan viewership of the sports and so on?
It has. And what, you know, in the fall sports so much, what, you know, fans, spectators coming to the game has to deal with the weather because so many sports are outdoors. So, you know, from Charlestown, we've had a pretty good fall. You know, we had a not bad weather at all as far as rain and stuff goes. It got a little hot, if you remember. Mm-hmm. But we had, you know, great evenings to come out and watch, whether it was soccer, football, tennis, you know, with our golf teams. It was great for our spectators, our fans, our athletes to be able to be out and be part of that. And I think, you know, when you think about the fall, you think about football, of course, because that's where your revenue comes in. And years past, I think last year, I remember Mark Weinberg saying there was like four Fridays that we didn't get rain last fall. This year, I can only remember one Friday we got rain. And that makes a big difference in your gate.
Yeah, I think 2 years ago that you're talking about, not only did we get rain, but we had thunderstorms that games had to be stopped or there was a period of time teams were called off the field because of the lightning and so on. Just a nightmare, it seemed like. We were in that kind of a situation. But it looked good on TV as far as the football state finals. It looked like the crowds were pretty good and probably made some money for the IHSAA.
Well, absolutely. Anytime you get a chance, you know, to go to Lucas Oil Stadium, and we talked about this last week with Matt a little bit, it's an opportunity for a fan that you get to be right in the front. You know, you're right there where all the action is. It's not like a Colts game where there's, you know, 40,000 people or whatever the place holds, but that place did not spare any expense. And that's an opportunity for, you know, just as a common fan to get up there and just kind of see the nuts and bolts of how the stadium runs itself and get to see some great football.
Yeah, and I think Indiana very lucky that they not only have that stadium, but it is made available to the IHSAA for the two-day tournament. Certainly makes it just a great adventure. It's right downtown, walking distance to hotels and restaurants and other fan favorite things, and I think it's a great venue. I've been a number of times and thoroughly enjoyed it. And IHSAA and the Colts and so on, great to work together and make that possible.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and one thing on that one is all the venues that are state finals are top-notch, whether it's Ball State for volleyball, whether it's IUPUI for swimming, Bankers Life for wrestling, basketball, Victory Field for baseball, Purdue for softball, Indiana for track. You know, it's an opportunity that I've got to be on the IHSA board, that I've got to see these state finals that I wouldn't have went to in any other for any other reason, whether unless we had a team participating in it. And I've been able to take advantage of that the past 3 years, and it's something that's very eye-opening. It's something that you really feel lucky that you've got a state that puts that type of emphasis on educational-based athletics.
One of the events that I was dragged to, because I'm not a cross-country runner, and if you saw me, you would know that just by one quick look. But Steve Sipes, principal at New Albany years ago, said, hey, why don't you ride up with me Saturday? And I thought, cross-country. I'd seen local events. I think I'd been to sectionals, especially out of Crawford County, which is a great venue as well for cross-country. But we were up on the IU golf course, and Steve had us positioned in a way where we could see the start, and it looked like a cavalry charge coming out of the starting gate, one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And, you know, I probably went back two or three times just to see it again, because at that golf course you could see almost the entire meet from one of the little hills around there, and it's amazing to see these kids run. Same way with other sports. I've been to the volleyball state finals. I think we broadcasted one year when New Albany was in it. But certainly encourage fans to get out and see these things, because it's just amazing at all levels, but especially when you get to the state finals level. The competition's great. The crowds and the atmosphere is great. And that cross country still sticks in my mind today, and that's been quite a few years ago.
Oh, absolutely. It's an opportunity to see athletes competing at the highest level. So you get to see a great venue. You get to see athletes who've trained all year to compete at that highest level and lay it all on the line for the state finals. So it's a lot of fun to go to.
Chad Gilbert, our guest here in our final segment here on Monday morning. Chad, one of the things I want to talk about, player transfers. And we're seeing it, obviously, at the college level. Some grad transfers, others just transfers. But of the four teams in the college football playoffs, three of them have a quarterback that transferred in. And it seems like what starts at college, or even the pros in some cases, trickles down to college and then trickles down to high school. And we've had players transferring for a long, long time at all of these levels. But right now, Kurt Hoff is in the middle of a mess, came from Forest Park, I believe, and transferred to Bar Reeve. He's been ruled ineligible, and he's not the only player in Indiana that's happened to. Most of them go unnoticed. The transfers are approved, and everything goes on. But what makes the difference in this process that one is – because people ask me, you know, why is he ineligible? Other kids aren't. And I said, I have no idea. But what's the process, and why sometimes ruled eligible, sometimes ruled ineligible?
You know, a lot of that has to do with the rules and the bylaws set forth on the IHSA. And the one thing unique about it is every case is different. So without being – on, you know, reading the transfer case or reading the rules on a certain kid, I wouldn't know how to answer that question on that specific case or any other kid's specific cases. And our, you know, and now you're talking to someone who transferred in college, and you know, you see Jalen Hurts, who transferred from Alabama to Oklahoma. There's a lot of things that come into play with that. For instance, I'll use my situation where I transferred in college. You go, you know, when you're making a decision on where you're wanting to go, and then this is totally different than high school, but this is kind of shifting gears on the Jalen Hurts type of deal. You're going to a place that, one, you feel comfortable with. Two, you're in a place where you like your – well, let me rewind that. When you're a place that you're comfortable with academically as well as athletically, you know, you want to go to college to get that education as your number one goal. You have to make sure that you're comfortable with the classroom, your class – comfortable with your living arrangements, and you're comfortable with your teammates. And then the thing that goes with that one is you want to win. My situation at Indiana State, when I went to Indiana State, I thought, well, you know, I had an opportunity to come up here, and I feel like I can contribute right away, and I feel like we got a chance to win. And, you know, an outlining thing is I feel like I have an opportunity to make the Indiana All-Star team, which was a goal of mine from when I was a kid. 10 years old, you know, going to All-Star games. Well, I didn't make the All-Star games. We didn't win, but I was comfortable. I had a great time up there. I had great professors, great friends, great teammates. But that drive to win is what made me transfer. And the if you think about back in those high school days, I had an opportunity to go to University of Louisville and chose Indiana State over that one because I felt like I had an opportunity to play and contribute at Indiana as I would have had at the University of Louisville. So that was one of the things that steered toward that one. And then being able to be in that set, you kind of came in. If you remember back when we were playing at Charlestown, we kind of had that. When we come in the gym, we're playing Charlestown tonight. It wasn't like, and we got Charlestown tonight. That's a win. It was like, we got Charlestown tonight. Well, when I was in Indiana State, it was kind of like, and here comes Indiana State. We're going to get them. When I went to USI, it felt like I had that thing back where people were there to watch USI and not the opposing team. And that was one of the things that I wanted to be, is I wanted to be that top dog again. That's when we went to USI that we had that mindset. Our teams had that, and Coach Pearl had that mindset. You think about USI before he got there, it didn't have that type of feel to it. And I think he has enabled that in kids. Going back to what kids do, I think that has a lot to do with it. There's some things that kids do selfishly, but who are you and I to determine what selfishly is? You know, there's different things in the mix that go along with it that we have no idea, and that's where I go back to every case is kind of differently, whether it's in the high school or the college ranks.
Chad, we're running out of time. I'd love to continue this conversation, but Matt's going to shoot me for running over. So thanks for joining us here on
Well, Listen, Gary, it's great to hear your voice. I love hearing you on the air, and you make it feel like it's basketball season again. So, and it's here, so it's time to get it.
Thank you very much. Chad Gilbert of Charlestown High School. That's going to wrap it up for us today here on the Hoosier Report.